Rivka Mazelish is a doctoral student in the history department of UW-Madison, and her focus is on folklore, one of the areas being folk music. She's getting ready to start a fellowship with the Smithsonian Institute in Washington and Smithsonian Folkways Recordings. And the mission of the recordings is, at least off their website, is dedicated to supporting cultural diversity and increased understanding among peoples through the documentation, preservation, and dissemination of sound. And I also just found out she's the 2018 Woody Guthrie Center Fellow. So welcome, Rivka. I'm glad you're here and glad we get to talk a little bit about folk music today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited.
That's great. You know, you sent me a copy of some of the stuff that you've been working on in your document, your dissertation intro. Begins with a story about Bob Dylan at a concert in 1966, not too long after he started plugging in his electric guitar, mollifying an angry crowd by telling them he was about to play a folk song. Now, up until this time in the 60s, Dylan was seen as the next generation of traditional folk artists, but he made people upset when he started playing music with an electric guitar. So why was that, and why did you start with this story?
Right, so the scene that I open with in 1966, the crowd is booing, jeering, yelling things, even telling Dylan, go back to Vietnam, go to Vietnam, go back to America, he's in France. People are angry that he is what they see him as is betraying folk.
Okay.
They believe that folk music is supposed to be acoustic. It's supposed to be an intimate relationship between the singer and the audience, and maybe even less distance between the singer and the audience. Everyone's sort of in the same group together. Someone from the audience might share the stage with the singer. And the songs are supposed to, if not be directly political, relate to very universal human experiences of love and loss, change, or actually be songs sort of advocating social justice.
Sure.
And when Dylan puts on sunglasses, plugs an electric guitar, has a loud backing band, and sings songs that the audience doesn't really connect to or they don't immediately connect to, they can't find any explicit politics in it, they can't find social justice in it, they feel like their whole world has been shifted and they hate it. for them, folk music is really not just a type of music that they happen to like, but it's a way of life and a way of describing their world, and also ideally is a way of describing a new world that they want to see. And they just don't hear that at all in the Dylan from 65 to 66 and his tours playing new songs and electric music.
So what was his response when he said, I'm gonna play a folk song?
Right, so suddenly he says, like sort of making fun of the audience. I think he's like, this next one's a folk song. I'm going to play a folk song. Immediately, everyone cheers. They're booing and jeering and saying, go to Vietnam, whatever. And then they cheer for the word folk song. So this is one of the reasons that I open with this scene is because I'm interested in debates going back even to the 19th century over what is the meaning of folk and why is folk valuable in society, especially democratic society. So here you have an example of the power of just the word folk song transforms this crowd. They're booing and suddenly they start cheering because that word has so much meaning for them. And so I'm interested in figuring out how by 1966 this word takes on such power and also what kind of meaning it has and how that meaning might be different from the meaning attributed to folk by very different kinds of people earlier in the 20th century.
Sure. So what he ended up playing, what?
So he ends up playing, after he says, I'm going to sing a folk song, he plays the song Leopard Skin Pillbox Hat. And, you know, people have very different ideas about what constitutes a folk song. But I think that Leopard Skin Pillbox Hat is a little different from what people think of when they think of folk.
Well, let's hear a little bit of that.
Well, I see you got your brand new leopard skin pillbox head. Yes, I see you got your brand new leopard skin pillbox head. Well, you must tell me, baby, how your head feels under something like that. Your brand new leopard skin pillbox head.
So, my guess is that wasn't quite what they were expecting at that point.
No, I don't think, you know, Dylan might argue that that's a folk song. And as a historian, I'm interested in those arguments and different ideas about folk. But the audience that booed him for playing like a Rolling Stone and Maggie's Farm, this is not what they had in mind when he said he's going to sing a folk song.
Well, let's hear a little bit about what, I think more about what they were expecting. Maybe a little Handsome Molly.
some other seaport town. I'd put my foot on a steamboat, sail the ocean around. By sailing around the ocean, while sailing round the sea, I'd think of handsome Molly wherever you might be.
Well, I it's funny because you can kind of hear in the contrast of those two songs that dividing line of what constitutes folk music and what doesn't, but also I think kind of what constitutes a sense of tradition and rootedness in people's minds and what is this change that's going on in society.
Absolutely.
And, yeah.
Handsome Molly is an old Scottish ballad. It's, you know, Dylan didn't write it himself. Plenty of people had covered it before him, so he's really putting himself in a tradition when he sings that song. And when he sings Leopard Skin Pillbox Hat, there are traditions there. It's in the studio recording. It's a 12-bar blues. He's, you know, it's a rock and roll sort of song, but it's really almost a declaration of independence, of escaping tradition. The song is mocking, ironic, it's weird. it's very different from the Scottish ballad and that folk tradition.
Sure. In the couple of years I've been on Simply Folk, you know, I've had conversations with listeners, I've had conversations, we have Adam at our Simply Folk team gatherings, about what constitutes folk music. How do we define that? How do we sort of embrace, and we try to take a wide view of what folk music is on the show. So how do you define it? How do you describe it? Someone said to you, what is folk music? What would you say?
Well, I would say there's no such thing as folk music. just sort of to be provocative. I don't like to define folk music because I'm a historian who studies how people in the past have defined folk music. So mostly I see myself as someone who, uplifts different voices throughout history making claims about what folk is, and I don't really judge any of those claims as more legitimate than others. I certainly think that some of them are sinister. You know, people have in the past used folk to claim this is a white country, and they claim that American folk is Anglo and comes from the UK, and they held folk festivals in the 1920s that were whites only. I definitely don't endorse that as folk, but that's someone using folk to make a claim about American identity. Other people use folk music politically to support unions, to support the civil rights movement. They claim that's folk. People have made claims about folk as a process and that it involves people coming together spontaneously, playing music together, and there's no commercial production involved at all. I'm interested in all those claims, and I think that folk is simply a tool that people have used to make a claim about what kind of country this is, what kind of country this should be, what kind of world we live in, and also about authenticity, which is sort of tricky as well. But I see folk as a tool. Certainly there's different aspects of folk that I like or that sort of make me feel like I'm listening to folk music. But I like to stay out of making any claim about what folk music is. I guess I'm most sympathetic to the idea of folk as almost a democratic process, as being able to take a tradition from the past and make it your own, and especially share it in a group, and that is something that's easy for amateurs to participate in as well. Usually folk songs have simple repetitive choruses so that people can catch on, or you can even make up your own lyrics as you go that speak to your own situation or your own life. And that's, I think, what I value most in folk music. But my head is too full of people from the past making totally different claims about what folk music is. So,
well, the word that comes to mind, I've always thought of as accessible. There's a sense of accessibility about folk music that I think, both in the style, in the topics, in the manner in which it's delivered. So I think, I would agree with what you're saying about that wide range within that. Well, let's listen to a couple of examples that you had suggested. One of them was Uncle Dave Macon with the song "Buddy, Won't You Roll Down the Line."
Oh, coming up hot, way back yonder in Tennessee, the least the convicts out. They worked them in the coal mines against free labor stout. Free labor rebelled against it, to win it took some time. But while the lease was in effect, they made them rise and shine. Oh, buddy, won't you roll down the line? Buddy, won't you roll down the line? gonna come, my darling, coming down the line. What do you want to roll down the line? What do you want to roll down the line? Gonna come, my darling, coming down the line.
So Uncle Dave Macon was one of the first well-known sort of traditional singers outside of his own community, and was one of the first stars of the Grand Ole Opry. And so what about that song makes you say, oh, this is a good example of...
I think a lot of people think of banjo when they think of folk music. I think his voice has this sort of twang that a lot of folk singers have tried to imitate if they didn't naturally grow up with that accent. This song is political in that it's about the experience of convicts working in coal mines, and it's sort of a protest without directly... It's not directly political in that it doesn't specifically name an injustice and call for a change, but it is political because it's a complaint against the experience of convict labor in coal mines. And I think that obviously there's a long tradition of political folk music, and there's also a tradition of some scholars arguing that political folk music is not folk music at all. But many people used folk music to describe the awful conditions of labor and to advocate for change. So.
Sure, and I think in music, not only in terms of political at the societal level, but the personal is political, as mm-hmm. the saying goes. And I think, you know, you mentioned a song by Buffy St. Marie, Codeine, I think really speaks to that powerfully. So let's hear a little bit of that.
My belly's craving, I got a shaking in my head. Feel like I'm dying, and wish I was dead. If I live till tomorrow, that'll be a long time. But I reel and I fall and I rise on codeine, and it's real, and it's real one more time.
There's a lot of power in that song. I mean, not just the way she delivers it, being Buffy St. Marie. I mean, she does a great job with that, but that experience and being, we've talked a lot about it from a historical perspective, but that's something that carries forward to today just as much, unfortunately.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a haunting song, and her delivery and the guitar also very haunting, and the lyrics. It's a ballad of personal trauma, and I think that it's has universal appeal, that anyone who has experienced this addiction and suffering or any kind of personal trauma and pain can see themselves in it, and that's definitely a aspect of folk music that people valued in the 1960s, particularly when she would perform this song at the Newport Folk Festival. The universal quality of personal expression in folk.
Yeah, I can understand, and I would agree with the idea of not trying to define folk. It's more of a collection of types of music and experiences and characteristics, but it seems like there's some threads that run through this. I mean, a sense of accessibility, the personal that is also universal, rootedness. I mean, I think those are some of the things I think we're hearing in some of the stuff that we're playing now. And I think one of those other themes is a sense of personal relationships, too. I mean, you know, we've talked a lot about the political, but then there's the flip side of that in terms of love and connection at the personal level.
Absolutely. Love songs.
Right.
Major.
Yeah. So let's hear a little bit of that from Tom Paxton right now.
It's a lesson too late for the learning, made of sand, made of sand. In the wink of an eye, my soul is turning. In your hand, in your hand. Are you going away with no word of farewell? Will there be not a trace left behind?
Well, I could have loved you better. Didn't mean to be unkind. You know that was the last thing on my mind.
That's from a recording. That's not the original recording, of course. It's from a concert recording that Tom Paxton did. But, you know, that song still carries weight today. I mean, we still have people requesting that on the show. I mean, there's something universal about that personal experience as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a beautiful song, but I think it's interesting to hear his voice in comparison to the other two songs that we just heard. It's very smooth and polished, and the other two songs are not like that. And that's, I think folk music is often associated with a sort of twang or an untrained voice, a haunting voice, a weird voice. But then at the same time, especially with Peter, Paul, and Mary in the 1960s, you get a lot of Joan Baez folk musicians who have very pretty voices, very beautiful voices, and Tom Paxton does as well. And you know, neither quality of voice is more folk than the other. But you know, some people didn't like the commercial polished quality of a Tom Paxton or Mary Travers, and thought that was a sort of inauthentic. At the same time, these people were revered by the 1960s folk revival as being, you know, great folk singers. So.
Well, and it's interesting, you know, I that tension between sort of commercial and sort of everydayness, between tradition and change, between electric and acoustic. I mean, I think folk music seems to sit in that sort of tension between the two. How do you take the past and carry it forward authentically, but yet at the same time adapt to new circumstances?
Exactly. And this is why I wanted to write my dissertation about the question about folk and what is folk, because I see it as a way of getting at all these other themes running through American history of continuity and change, authenticity and insincerity, you know, the authentic versus the commercial. But right, definitely holding on to old traditions, or how do you maintain your role in a tradition and still move that tradition forward and make sure it doesn't die because of a desire to freeze it or own it. This is something that Bob Dylan was very concerned about and really argued when he was accused of betraying folk. He argued that it was his accusers who had betrayed folk because they were trying to own it or freeze it or make it one thing only. And he was saving folk because he was moving it in different directions.
Sure. Well, and it's always interesting to me when I see a new recording come out that takes a traditional song and still makes it alive for today, because in a way it's doing both of those things at the same time. And I think it reminds audiences that this piece has some power yet, has something to say yet today. We got an example of that with Guy Davis and Fabrizio Poggi with the song Take This Hammer. Let's hear a little bit of that. About that song, what about that song do you like?
Well, this song is actually a sequel to the great folk song John Henry. One of the lines is, "This is the hammer that killed John Henry, but it won't kill me." And this song is old, and there's a version of it on the Anthology of American Folk Music that came out in 1952, published by Folkways Records, and became sort of like the Bible for the 1960s folk revival. And in a sense, it's like a sequel to an old folk song. It also is a comment on finding oneself in an old tradition. You know, this hammer is part of the tradition. It's part of the folk tradition of John Henry. But it killed John Henry, but it won't kill me. I can find my place in this folk tradition, you know, take up the hammer and do something different with it and not die like John Henry, metaphorically. So I think that's a great example of a kind of continuing a folk tradition in song.
Well, and it also speaks to today's contemporary situation too, I think, you know, in terms of people saying, you know, this may have taken us down before, but not now.
Absolutely.
Things have changed.
Yeah.
Or they should change, and they will change.
Right. It's a hopeful song.
Yeah. Well, and along those lines, I mean, that carrying that folk music tradition forward to speak to the situation of today, it's really powerful to me to see that, because you're not only evoking what you're dealing with right now, but you're remembering all those things that had happened beforehand and bringing that experience with the music, right?
Absolutely. And I think that's the power of folk. And, you know, people have argued sometimes bitterly about what to take and what to leave and what the change means. And I find that fascinating. But ultimately, that's what being part of a tradition is.
Yeah. Well, let's hear a little bit more from that tradition song that perhaps is being used even today. Let's hear a little bit from the Freedom Singers from the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee and their version of We Shall Not Be Moved.
We
So here's a song that was used, a traditional song that was brought forward to the 60s for the civil rights movement, and then it's being brought forth today?
Absolutely. It was used as an anti-fascist song in World War II. It was used as a labor song, a song in the civil rights movement, a song for migrant rights, farm workers. It's been used by any group sort of demanding social justice and demanding a voice. And teachers used it in West Virginia and in Oklahoma last spring when they went on strike. And I was really thrilled to hear them singing this song. Again, it's this example of just a sort of connection across American history of other movements fighting for a better world. And the fact that the song could still have that power, I thought was really beautiful.
That's great. So it must be exciting for you to be able to sort of go into the heart of this with the Smithsonian. Right?
Absolutely. Folkways Records is there now, has been there since the late 80s. And I can look at all the material that they have on file from going back into the 19th century about defining and categorizing folk and folk music. The Smithsonian as an institution also played a role in defining what folk music is, having exhibits on the folk, and since the 80s having Folkways Records. So I'm going to be looking through all their material, paying attention to anyone making a claim about the value of folk music or the definition of folk music.
That's great. And then with the Woody Guthrie Center, what's your fellowship been with that?
The Woody Guthrie Center in Tulsa, Oklahoma, is a beautiful museum for Woody Guthrie. It's interactive. It's exciting. And they also have everything that he wrote, his notes on albums that he owned, pages and pages of journals that he filled up with his own sort of philosophical musings. He was a great prose writer, actually, really beautiful, almost sounds like Walt Whitman. And I'm very fortunate to be able to look through all of that material and, again, pay attention to what was Woody Guthrie's philosophy of democracy, what was his vision for America, and how does folk fit into that? What did he think the value of folk music was? And he often got into arguments, too, with his fellow folk singers, Pete Seeger, Lee Hayes, and with critics writing in magazines about what folk music is. And it was very important to him.
So. Wow. Well, Rivka, this has been great. Thank you so much for coming in and talking a little bit. And I hope we'll keep in touch. I want to hear how your work is progressing.
Absolutely. I would love to. Thank you so much.
Thanks.